Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Hope you're well. Hope your family is well, including your companion animals. And that's the thing now. You know, your dog kind of doesn't look good, or your cat, and you're thinking, do I take my pet to the veterinarian? Don't I take my pet to the veterinarian? We'll answer those questions and much more with Dr. Dana Varble, who's the chief veterinary officer of the North American Veterinary Community, in just a moment. Dr. Marty Becker will be here. He's typically here talking about an initiative called Fear Free and a website called Fear Free Happy Homes. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, but we'll also talk about the human-animal bond. He's quite expert in that particular area. I serve on the board of the Human-Animal Bond Association, so that's going to work out well. And some misconceptions, some things you read on the internet about COVID-19 and pets that just aren't true. I will clarify. But first, Dr. Dana Varble is the chief veterinary officer at the North American Veterinary Community. She's a big shot. But she's also based, but she's also based right here in the Chicago area. And Dr. Varble, it's a tough time for veterinarians because you have to balance. First of all, I am so happy. You don't even know this story. So let me tell you a very quick story. I was reading a story in the Chicago Tribune the day the governor was about to say shelter at home. Hours beforehand, Tribune came out with the story and they listed all of the businesses that were considered essential. And whether they just, the reporter just made a mistake or not, that I still don't know. But they did not list veterinary practices or, for that matter, pet stores. So I instantly am texting my senator, my state senator, and I said to Sarah Feigenholz, who gets it, she is a huge cat lover, and she said, I'm on it. And she contacted some of her colleagues. And wouldn't you know it, like 2 hours later when the governor spoke, he even mentioned in Illinois, right, veterinary practices. So maybe that text that I sent Senator Feigenholz was a part of the reason, or the reason for that. I'll never know for sure. But not all communities are taking veterinary practices as seriously. I don't know if any community says, let's not consider them essential. I think that communities maybe sometimes just don't think about it. But in my opinion, they need to.
Yeah, what we're hearing from you know, especially the state legislature, not just in Illinois, but throughout the country, is as they're putting, you know, more restrictions and more stay-at-home requests out, basically veterinary medicine is considered essential in most of the reports that I'm hearing. There's been some changes and some updates through this process as we consider, is it just emergency practice versus all veterinary clinics? But my understanding is that right now throughout the country, most states are considering all veterinary practices as essential businesses because animal health is so important through this time.
Well, animal health intertwines with our health. I think that's one reason why, not only psychologically, but medically as well, because there are so many issues of leptospirosis, for example. So the fact of the matter is, most people in America and most people in the Chicago area have a dog or a cat. That's just a fact. And you may like it, you may not like it. It is a fact. So here is something that potentially people can get. It doesn't happen a lot, but it can and does happen. So I'm using that as an example because it's rabies might be another one. I mean, if we don't vaccinate now, the threshold is not going to drop in 2 months of rabies vaccines. But if you have a young puppy, you know, with the first rabies vaccine or in the process of getting those vaccines for the sake of the puppy and our health. So it isn't only about animal health, which is, in my view, the right thing to do, but it's also potentially about our health.
Yeah, this is it's a public health issue. And that's the way we're positioning it to, again, to our government, is that remember that veterinary medicine also serves a very important role in public health. Anything from our production animals, our farm animals, to our pets, and keeping zoonotic disease or disease that passes from animals to humans in check during this time. Because while we certainly have a coronavirus issue to deal with, we don't want during this time of high medical need for other diseases to become more prevalent either.
Now, you are trained in this kind of thing. It's interesting when this all broke, I don't know, weeks and weeks ago at this point, it seems like 5 years ago in a way, but in a way, it seems like just yesterday. So when all of this began to happen, it's interesting to me that veterinary practices from New York City to San Francisco and everything in between more or less responded the same way. It's as if, now protocols have since come out, but it's as if, I think that and there was no email that went to every veterinarian and every veterinary
Correct.
Practice. So I think that it's the training that not only veterinarians, but frankly, veterinary technicians and nurses have as well.
Absolutely. We have a lot of training and education in infectious and contagious diseases, and we're very aware of zoonotic diseases. Again, because we work with animals and we know that there are times that animals can pass those diseases, like the examples you gave, leptospirosis, rabies, can pass from animals to humans. So we're very aware when those conditions arise how to take action. Now, we've been very lucky, and there's no evidence that this coronavirus can pass from animals to humans. But because we tend to be cautious about diseases passing from animals to humans, and because I think the veterinary profession is more aware that that can happen, it was very easy for veterinarians, I think, to put some precautions in place very early in this process.
Yeah, and as a result, mm-hmm. veterinarians have done so far, knock on something, a pretty good job at I think, protecting themselves physically from COVID-19. But
yeah,
the doc,
it was pretty early that certain precautions got put in place just to protect our staff. Yeah.
But here's what I want to talk about, and appropriately so, absolutely appropriately so, human physicians are getting attention for their mental health and the strain of going through all of this. Veterinarians, for the most part, are out there working. Some practices are sacrificing a lot of dollars they just don't have to treat patients. And the other thing, maybe more significantly, is most veterinarians today, like most professions, people have families. So you're working your tails off, so to speak, and then you come then you come home to your family. And it's got to be mentally exhausting. So I know I can't ask you fairly about every single veterinarian and veterinary technician, but how's the profession doing?
Well, you know, it is a tough time, and everyone's extremely stressed. I mean, there's kind of multiple factors. One, how do we protect human health at this time? How do we make sure that our staff stays healthy so that we can continue to perform those essential animal health functions through this process? Because obviously, if we lose too many of our staff or we lose too many veterinarians, we're not going to be able to assist the public and serve that important public health role. So that's a concern. And again, there's a lot of steps veterinary clinics have taken, curbside pickup and drop off, extra sanitation measures to try and help with that. There's obviously business models have changed pretty dramatically. And, you know, there's a concern about just how are we going to get through this as small businesses? What, you know, what safeguards do we have? What advantages do we have? What disadvantage do we have? And again, veterinarians tend to be a group that is very aware of their role in public health. How do we conserve personal protective equipment, masks, and gowns at this time, so that one, we have enough for, again, animal emergencies, but also so that we're not dipping into the supply we need for human health, which we understand is their need is probably greater at this time. And I shouldn't say probably, it is greater at this time.
So
there's a lot of stress. And, you know, I think what we're encouraging veterinarians to do is. And what we're encouraging the public to do, take it day by day, you know, take each step. You know, if you feel yourself getting overwhelmed, limit your news consumption, limit your social media consumption, lean on your family. And the other thing I'm going to encourage that I think you'll understand, Steve, is lean on your pets. The human-animal bond is more important than ever right now. There is a lot of scientific evidence out there that's very good that shows our relationship with our pets reduces stress, reduces blood pressure, and really helps us cope. And again, we're really lucky. Our companion animals are not, we're not going to get coronavirus from them unless it was something extremely bizarre happened. But in all likelihood, they are a safe source of stress reduction at this time in our lives.
Yeah, yeah. So what you do is also called in the industry exotics. So very quickly here, when you know, I've been asking about, okay, how do you know when you need to go to the veterinarian? Well, if you have a pet turtle, a pet snake, a pet ferret, how do you know then? Because you don't see these clients typically for routine visits. You see them when something is really wrong. And by the time something is really wrong with a pet bird, a pet ferret, or a pet guinea pig, something is really wrong at that point by the time most people notice it.
Yeah.
So should you?
Yeah.
You go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it really can be. You know, that's the thing, is a lot of our exotic pets are really good at hiding their symptoms. Really, really good. So you're absolutely right. By the time we see them, oftentimes they're extremely sick. We do encourage all pet owners to bring in their pets for annual exams, whether you have a snake, a lovebird, a turtle, or everything, just so we can try and catch things early, just like we do with dogs and cats. But you're right. It's very important that we continue to perform those essential sick animal exams on our exotic pets during this time.
All right. Well, Dr. Dana Varble, as I say, so I'm going to put all the responsibility on you. I know you are not responsible for every veterinarian and technician, 60,000 and how many technicians, 60 more thousand or so.
Yeah,
lots. Yeah. You're not responsible for every one of them, but I want you to do me a favor and say thank you to every one of your colleagues, because
you have all been doing an amazing job right now. They're out there. They're in the trenches, working hard every day to keep all of our animals safe and healthy at this time. I can't thank them enough.
I agree with you, Dr. Varble. Always good to talk to you, and hopefully next time under better circumstances. Thank you.
That'd be great. Thanks, Steve.
Steve Dale back at WGN, Steve Dale's Pet World. Good morning. I'm not sure he's ready to accept the word legend, but he is a legend in veterinary medicine. Dr. Marty Becker, who's been here in the studio at WGN. Now he's at the Almost Heaven Ranch in Idaho, where he grows potatoes and things, probably. Hello, Dr. Becker.
Hello, friend.
How are your potatoes?
Doing good. You know, it's actually the southern part of the state on that volcanic plain by the Snake River is where they raise potatoes. Up here, and this is a little tidbit, in northern Idaho is where Anheuser-Busch raises most of their hops.
Really? Who knew that?
Yeah, it's the same latitude as Bavaria and ideal conditions. So when you tip a Budweiser, you can think of Bonner's Ferry, Idaho.
When I have my next Budweiser, I'll think of Dr. Marty Becker. And you're here because this has been a really complicated time, a very uneasy time for all of us. For people that have companion animals, a dog or a cat at home, do we have sort of a built-in advantage? Is there a drug there that we're not going to feel side effects from?
God, I love the way you put that. Yeah, it's a medicine that's readily available. It's in most American homes. It's a medicine that tastes good, so to speak, and there's no side effects other than maybe being coursed out of an extra treat now that you're home more. But, you know, when I was in veterinary school, it started in 1976, and Leo Bustad was the dean, and he was really the first person to look at the human-animal health connection globally. So I was lucky in having him to teach me about the human-animal bond and the healing power of pets. And that ended up years later writing a book, The Healing Power of Pets, that I wrote with a former New York Times reporter. And you get to see that, I guess it's just that pets just don't make us feel good, but they're good for us. And Steve, you and I have talked about this human-animal bond for years. And in fact, and I know in our conversations, maybe over a Budweiser, we've talked about the fact that we had experienced the healing power of pets ourselves. We had witnessed it in other people. We had intuited it to be true, but, you know, neither one of us are scientists. And now the science has painted in the numbers of what we knew to, you know, those of us that are listening out there knew to be true all along.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. By the way, I'll do a book plug for you, The Healing Power of Pets, if you're looking for something to read. Really does tell us about how pets are good for us. And what you wrote about then a bit, but today if you were to write that book all over again, we'd have much more knowledge about how we're also good for them. It does work both ways.
Yeah, matter of fact, when I look back at that book, it came out exactly the week of 9/11. I can place it. So a book that won awards that didn't do as well as it could have because of when it came out. But back then, there was very little known about cats.
Yeah.
And now we know if you have a cat, for example, this is one example. If you have a cat, you're 8 times more likely to not have a cardiovascular event. That's a heart attack or stroke. 80% less likely. If you have a dog and you have a heart attack, you're 6 times more likely to be alive a year later. But at the time, we didn't know a lot about it. It almost seems whether it was hippotherapy, which is with horses, or it was, service dogs or animal-assisted therapy, you were thinking that it was, some people thought it was abusive to them to have animals go into hospitals and things. And now we know there's reciprocity there. If you think about it, there hasn't been another domesticated species in 5,000 years. Only dogs and cats have knocked down the doors of our homes and apartments en masse. And there had to be something there. And now we know with the science that actually there's a biochemical event that happens when you're sitting with a pet on your lap. And, you know, they're at 101.5, like a little furry hot water bottle, and you're petting them. There's a massive release of biochemicals, call it a biochemical spa treatment, oxytocin, the hug hormone, prolactin, what you get from a mother nursing a baby, also endorphins, the runner's high, and phenylethylamine, the active ingredient in chocolate. So think of your pet as a big chocolate bar with all those positive endorphins that, like myself, I take some for antidepressants, and you get it from a dog.
Yeah, well, of course, and you're absolutely right about that, naturally. Now, here we are, home alone with our other family members and our companion animals. And sometimes look for things to do. One place to go that I recommend is a website that I think you know a bit about called Fear Free Happy Homes. So fearfreehappyhomes.com is the website. Tell us how using that website might tie into everything going on today.
Well, it's complimentary, first of all, to everybody, and it's always been complimentary. So it's not like we did it just because there's a COVID-19 virus, but it's really the only place that I know of in the Internet where you can find things about reducing fear, anxiety, stress in pets, increasing happy and calm, and doing enrichment activities. Steve, I know you've been a couple decades in talking about enrichment stuff for cats. You've made that kind of a primary passion for you. And there's lots of things in there about how you can and should feed pets differently, how each pet has some kind of genetic exuberance it was designed for. Retrievers retrieve, setters set. A lot of dogs do scent training. Terriers dig. Cats are both prey and predators, so you do things that let them manifest this genetic exuberance that they have. And I can give you two examples here at Almost Heaven Ranch in northern Idaho that I've done. We haven't used food bowls for 15 years, but we also, trying to do something different. My wife, Teresa, took an Amazon box and simply cut about 10 holes in the top of it, and one side was open, and I laid on the ground with a turkey hot dog and would stick the hot dog up through the holes like whack-a-mole, and the dog would try to, time it and reach up and grab a little piece of this hot dog. It was so incredibly fun, and we have barn cats. We live rural, and they're feral cats, and I hadn't played with them probably 5 years and just did a cat dancer hack with a pole with a pigeon feather on the end of it, and have taken time, and it's so incredible. I'm benefiting from it, and they're benefiting from it, but anybody in there, and it doesn't matter what apartment size you have or where you live, there's things that you can do to help your pet through this time and help yourself by extension.
And again, that website is fearfreehappyhomes.com. Cool thing about the website is, yes, it gives you ideas and stories, just like what you said, but it also has newsworthy stories, if you will. For example, keeping up to date about COVID-19, and the stories, even though they're on a website meant for dog and cat owners, are all reviewed by experts, which is something you never see on the Internet. It's almost like a peer-reviewed journal written for pet owners.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. We actually have, Steve, you and I know, but probably nobody listening out there knows, there are 87 boarded veterinary behaviorists at American College of Veterinary Behavior. You've written a book with them and are working on another book with them. 87 boarded veterinary behaviorists, and of that, 65 are on the advisory group of Fear Free. And on Fear Free Happy Homes, every single thing on all, you know, fearfreeshelters.com, fearfreehappyhomes.com, fearfreepets.com, our magazine, Happy Paws, everything is reviewed by boarded veterinary behaviorists. And the people that write in there, you know, it's not Trixie from Bubbles and Bow Dog Salon talking about dermatitis or Andy from Acme Dog Training. These are all experts that we would see when we go to these large veterinary conferences. So you know the authenticity is there.
That's true, and it's absolutely free to folks. And there's fun stuff, too, like games you can play. There are videos you could watch. Some are animated so the kids can watch them. FearFreeHappyHomes.com. But you're primarily here to talk about the fact that spending this time with our pets is not a bad thing. It's a great stress buster for all of us. And maybe having more of an opportunity to play with them, good for us. Good for them, as you point out. Dr. Becker, I thank you. Steve Dale back with you. Regarding COVID-19 and pets, so much misinformation out there. I mean, we set the record straight, I think, last week with Dr. John Howe, the American Veterinary Medical Association, that your pets are very unlikely to get COVID-19 from you. Very unlikely. Very, 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 very unlikely. In fact, it's not going to happen. Or that they can give it to one another or back to you. Another misconception, hand sanitizer, is that if you drop it or spill it or the pets have some, it will instantly kill them. It's not a good thing for them, but it's not like, as the internet says, antifreeze. In fact, it's alcohol. So it makes them drunk, except worse than that, because the alcohol content, as we all know now, has to be over 60%. So can you imagine over 60% alcohol in beer? And it's not good to have our pets drink beer or anyway, right? So it really can be very, very dangerous, but for different reasons than the internet says. And one more thing, wearing mask. I've actually saw a dog with a mask on. Don't do that. Not even for a picture because you think it's funny. It's very uncomfortable for the dog. And if you're serious about it, I will tell you very seriously, it won't do any good regarding transmission of COVID-19, which the dog is not going to get anyway.